Okay, good evening, everyone. So the topic that we're going to discuss tonight is the Musaf Tefillah of Yom Kippur. Now, rather than try to give a survey and talk a little bit about every part of Musaf, which I think would be a little too ambitious for the short time that we have, so I want to try to zero in on one aspect of the Tefillah Musaf. Okay, what I would say is the highlight, the pièce de résistance of the Tefillah. I'm just curious to get your opinion for a second. What you would consider to be the highlight of the Tefillah Musaf? Okay, I'm at advantage because I spent the last couple hours looking over the Tefillah. But given your impressions from the last number of years or just on the nature of Yom Kippur, what would you pinpoint as being the essence of the Tefillah? What? The Avodah?
It's dramatic.
What? It's dramatic. Okay, the Avodah. I'll take the Avodah. Anybody want to second the Avodah?
Yes.
It's not a tokef. Okay. Avoda?
Yeah.
Avoda. Okay, so I was actually, when I was looking over Shmoneh Esrei, I was kind of oscillating between Asana tokef or the Avoda. And in the end, I sided with the Avoda, actually. So first of all, the Asana tokef comes up also on, it also comes up on Rosh Hashanah. So it's not something that's distinctly Yom Kippur. And it comes up twice in all the tefillos. It comes up in Shacharis and it comes up in Musaf. So it doesn't seem to be something that's distinctly Yom Kippur Tefillah Musaf oriented. So indeed, the highlight of the Tefillah seems to be the Avoda. In Rosh Hashanah? No?
No.
Doesn't?
No.
All right. Maybe it should. Well, then it comes up even in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so it's not something that's distinctly Yom Kippurim. All right. You should work on it. I don't know why. Why is it Dafka Musaf? But why is it specifically Musaf then? Maybe Chicago has different practice than they have in New Jersey. So you'll see right before we start the Avodah, actually, there's a very nice introduction that the Chazan says. On page 809 in the Birnbaum Machzor, the Chazan says, Ochila la'el achale panav. I firmly hope in Hashem, and I plead with him. I ask him to grant me the gift of speech, that I may sing his praise amongst the people. Right, the Chazan's asking Hashem for the ability to say the immediate next part of the tefillah correctly and appropriately, to do justice to the next part of the tefillah. And what's the next part of the tefillah? So on page 811, you have the Avodah, the Amitz Koach. It's a piyut that goes through the entire process of what the Kohen Gadol did in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his commentary to the Machzor, so he says, why do you have this prayer of Ochila Lakel Achala Panav right before the Avodah? And he already points out that the Avodah breaks the rules of the normal Tefillas Musaf that we generally have throughout the year. Generally, what do? We just mentioned Psukim from the Torah, right? On Shabbos, we bring Shnei Kvasim B'nei Shana, or on Yontif, we bring this Karban. And we quote the Psukim from the Torah. Not so on Yom Kippur. Instead, we have this long description that goes on for pages, starting from the very beginning, and it goes through the entire process of the Avodah. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explains that because the Kohen Gadol's, because the Shliach Tzibur is going into the nuances of the process, so he has to ask for the special help in getting it correctly, and in saying the tefillah the right way. So we'll go into that in a second. I want to also point out that if you look at the earlier sources, so particularly the Ravya and the Kolbo, two medieval commentaries on Halacha, so they both quote a very strange position from the Gaonim. We say the Avodah how many times? Once, during Musaf. But there was a practice to say the Avodah in Shacharis, to say it again in Musaf, to say it again in Mincha. So three of the tefillos of the day would center around the Avodah. You never find such a thing when it comes to the other Yom Tovim. You never find such a thing when it comes to Shabbos. And the Tefillah of Musaf is the only one that's centered around the Karbanos. So why was there this position out there to say the Avodah three times in all different Tefillos? Now we reject that custom. So why do we reject that? So one response that the Ravya quotes from Rav Haigon, one of the late Gaonim, around the 10th century, it So he says, because just like every other Shabbos, you mention the Karbanos once in davening, just in Musaf, so too on Yom Kippur. It's not any different. But Rav Amram Gon, if anybody knows the history of Tefillah, so the first work that we have that goes through the entire Tefillah for all the weekdays in the Yomim Tovim and Shabbos and Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah is a Siddur of Rav Amram Gon. I think it dates back to somewhere around like the 8th century or the 9th century. And he suggests, Rav Amram Gon suggests, he says, look at Rosh Hashanah. What's the highlight of Rosh Hashanah? What's the mitzvah? Tkiyah Shofar, right? Yom Tshuah Yielachem. And we only mention Tkiyah Shofar in which tefillah? Or which tefillah centers around the Tkiyah Shofar? Only Musaf. Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. So there it's the essence of the day, right? Rosh Hashanah is built around Tkiyah Shofar, and it only appears in Musaf. So argues Rav Amram Gon, so too on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is centered around the Avodah, and yeah, really, you should say it in every one of the tefillos, Shachris, Mincha, and Musaf. But, as a general rule, we only mention the essence or the character of the day in Musaf, just like Tkiyah Shofar only appears on Rosh Hashanah in Musaf. Okay, so even though we don't necessarily have the practice to say the Avodah three different times, the fact that it's at the center of Musaf definitely begs the parallel to Tkiyah Shofar, where it's the character of the day, but it only appears once in Tefillah. That's the observation I want to make. That's point number one. Point number two is how we say the Avodah. There's a big difference how we say the Avodah on Yom Kippur and how we say the Avodah when it comes to, let's say, a Shabbos or Yom Tov. And what are the main differences, if anybody wants to suggest?
Detail.
The detail. First of all, on other Yomim Tovim and Shabbos, you only mention the subject matter that's different. You say, this is the karban that we brought. Shnei kvasim b'nei shana temimim. Or min chasam v'niskehem kemudabar. Right? These are the different offerings that went along with the karban. On Yom Kippur, we talk about the entire process. How they sprinkled the blood, how they took the incense into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, how they passed the blood from one Kohen to the other Kohen, how they slaughtered the animal, how they sprinkled the blood inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, how they sent the Seir HaMishtaleach off the cliff in the desert. So you go through the entire process. You don't just mention what karbanos were brought. So A, there's a difference in terms of just the descriptive nature of the Avodah. And there's another difference. Any other differences? Oh, excellent. The participation. Right? And if you're in shul for Musaf, right, so what happens? So Shliach Tzibur, the Chazan gets up, and he'll say, I'll say at one point, Achas. And everyone else will scream, Achas v'Achas. And he'll say, Achas v'Shtayim, Achas v'Shalosh. Everyone together is kind of echoing the actual words that the Kohen Gadol would say in his Avodah. When he sprinkled the blood, he would count one up and seven down. So he would count it. So we, the whole Tzibur, the whole congregation participates in that counting. You never find that on a regular Shabbos. And what else? There's another dimension of the participation, right? The bowing. The krios. Right? When else do you find, you have once on Rosh Hashanah in Aleinu, and once on Yom Kippur in Aleinu. So anachnu korim, mishtachav imodim. But during the Yom Kippur Avodah, so everyone bows down. They do a full kriya, a full bow called Pishut Yadayim V'Raglayim, spreading out your hands and your feet. Now that was reserved only for the Beis HaMikdash. That's the only time they would do full bowing. And yet, we imitate that on Yom Kippur. So what prompted us that on Yom Kippur we're going to imitate the exact process of what happened in the Beis HaMikdash? Let me read you a ruling from the Shulchan Aruch, just to put this minhag of bowing in perspective. Does the Shliach Tzibur also bow?
Yes.
Yeah, he does bow. Okay. Now, generally, right, we tend to look at ourselves as like we abide so closely to what the Shulchan Aruch has to say. Right? We're a very text-driven society. So if the Shulchan Aruch says it, everyone's going to do it. Like they tell the joke that, you know, if Hashem really wanted people to not steal, he should have taken it out of the Aseres HaDibros and put it into the Mishnah Berurah, and then people wouldn't be stealing. Okay, but the Shulchan Aruch here rules. Let me read it to you. When the Shliach Tzibur reads the process that describes the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash, so And when they heard the Shem Hashem, they would all fall onto their faces and bow. So Shulchan Aruch says that we have the custom to bow during the Avodah. That's strange in and of itself. But it's absolutely prohibited for the Shliach Tzibur, for the Chazin, to move during the Tefillah. Okay? So Shulchan Aruch says he's not allowed to do it. He's not allowed to bow down because that's a disruption to his Tefillah Shemoneh Esrei. He can't move in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. So our minog actually goes against the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? So the Mishnah Berurah already quotes the Taz, who is bothered by the contradiction between our custom and the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, right? Because you'll see that the Chazin does it anyway. He says, "V'akvar pashar ha-minog shegam ha-shliach tzibor osekein." He's like, and it must be that we hold that moving around a little bit is not considered a disruption to the Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, he's like trying to finagle out of it. He's trying to maneuver out of it. Okay, but actually, what we do today is we try to compromise. So if you'll notice, let's say this is where the bima. So for the Yom Kippur davening, you'll have an extra bima, and the chazan will stand behind the second bima, and then they'll move that bima when he's about to bow, and he'll bow without moving. I mean, he'll bow down, but he'll never move his feet, because he's standing already removed from the bima. But we're so adamant to preserve this minog, just do away with it, right? Shulchan Aruch says not to do it, but we're adamant to simulate exactly what went on in the Beis HaMikdash against the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch. It's fascinating. It's the tenacity of a minog that we have. So why are we doing this, and why don't we do this generally? What's another difference that we have? I also point out that not only is the bowing of the Shliach Tzibur controversial, in general, you're not allowed to bow outside the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So some people put like a napkin in front of them when they bow, so you're not actually bowing on the floor. But it's a bit controversial, right, this whole practice of bowing. So why are we, despite this controversy, why are we so adamant? So Rabbi Soloveitchik here too suggests, also in his Machzor, in a different section, he says, oh, maybe because we view the shul on Yom Kippur as being like a kind of a Beis HaMikdash. Okay, it's a nice idea. But maybe there's something else. Maybe there's something else going on here. Any other ways that we're simulating the actual avodah on the Beis HaMikdash and Yom Kippur? So we saw the subject matter is different. Let's say the bowing is different. The participation of the congregation is different. Anything else? Who's allowed to be the Shliach Tzibur on Yom Kippur? Are there any qualifications? So you have to be over 30 and you have to be married. Okay, so where do these qualifications come from? Excellent. So a Kohen, in order to do the Avodah on the Beis HaMikdash, he has to be above 30. Right? And why married? Also, not a Kohen doesn't have to be married, but the Kohen Gadol, who's in charge of the Avodah on Yom Kippur, so he could only do the Avodah if he's married. The Torah says, V'chiper ba'ado va'ad beso. He receives atonement for himself and for his whole household. And the Gemara says, Beso zu ishto. His household means his wife. So if the Kohen Gadol doesn't have a responsibility towards other people, he doesn't have immediate responsibility towards his family, then he's not fit to represent the entire congregation of the Jewish people. Only somebody who has the responsibility of marriage is fit to represent the entire congregation of Israel. And sure enough, so if you look in the Shulchan Aruch earlier, when he talks about who's allowed to be the Shliach Tzibur, so he says, Sheyehe Naso, he has to be married. Dumya de Kohen Gadol, just like the Kohen Gadol, Shahi Mechinim lo Isha Acheres. And in fact, they were so concerned about this, that let's say the Kohen Gadol's wife would die right before Yom Kippur. So they're stuck, and the Kohen Gadol can't do the Avodah. So the Mishnah says that they used to separate somebody, they used to have a woman who was designated that, in case his wife died, she would marry him before Yom Kippur, and he'd be able to go ahead with the Avodah. Okay? And similarly, this qualification of being 30 also is to simulate the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so not only does it focus on the subject matter, not only does our simulation adopt the bowing down of the Beis HaMikdash, not only do we go through every nuance of the avodah, but even the person who's representing us on Yom Kippur, he has to have the qualifications of, I guess not exactly a Kohen Gadol, but at least some of the basic qualifications of being married and being above 30. And we saw an interesting perspective that maybe you should really say the avoda in all three davenings.
Is there a question?
Yeah.
But 30 then was much older of an age than it is now. So why is it?
Yeah, it was.
I don't know. They lived till.
In times of the Beis Hamikdash, they lived older than we did.
People didn't live as long.
Right, exactly.
Oh, they didn't live as long. So you think you should move it lower?
I mean, I don't know why is it specifically 30 the age?
Because right.
They were getting married when they were like 12. So why 30?
It's a good question. I didn't really think about it. I'll give it some thought.
Okay.
Right. You're assuming that's like relative to, I guess,
yeah,
where you peak in.
I'm just curious why the age of 30 and not like.
Right. Well, the Torah says in order to serve, you have to be Mishloshim Shana Lamala. That's like already in the Torah that has that age.
So in order to learn Kabbalah, you have to be 40 and married, right? So then why isn't it 40?
Yeah, so you could have different ages for, you know, different milestones for
right.
different prophecies. All right. So let me just contrast this, let's say, with another custom that we have. Okay, so every morning, right, most of us, or some of us, depending on the time you wake up. So before Shachris, so there's a part called Korbanos. Right? Before Psukei Zimra. There's a whole series, part of the Tefillah that's called Korbanos. And over there you talk about the Korban that's brought every single day in the Beis HaMikdash. There's a Korban Tamid. It's brought every day. There was a process twice a day. Once in the morning and once in the evening. Once in the afternoon. So does that have the same, let's say, qualifications or the same standards as some of the things I outlined over here? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, where he discusses these laws of saying the Korbanos in the morning, every morning, you find the exact opposite tendency. The Magen Avraham, one of the important commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, so he says, I don't understand how people say Korbanos sitting. They brought the Korban in the Beis HaMikdash standing. Most people get to Shul, so they... Maybe some people who say Korbanos on their way to Shul will say it's standing. But people who say Korbanos once they're in Shul already will probably be sitting. Right? But the Magen Avraham says, of course you have to stand, because that's the way they brought them in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, all the poskim, all the commentators that followed him, they go crazy and they say, you know, I saw this big tzaddik davening in Shul and he never stood up. And I saw that rabbi davening in Shul and he never stood up for Psukei Dezimra. That's the reason, by the way, why they have the Rabbanim sitting in the front of the Shul. So everybody could see what they're doing, and you could report on, you know, what they were nohag to do. They keep the rabbinic intern in the back, because you're never supposed to learn from the rabbinic intern. But everyone says no one ever followed this practice of standing up during Korbanos, because it's not a real simulation. We're not really trying to imitate it. And then there's another practice quoted by the Ber Heitev, also on Shulchan Aruch. They always brought the Tamid Bitzibor. It was a collective korban, right? The entire congregation was involved. It was owned by Bnei Yisrael, not by a single individual. So he says, maybe we should really say korbanos together in shul. The chazan reads it out loud, and everyone says it along, because it's the entire tzibur together. And everyone else goes crazy, and it's like, I saw this tzaddik in shul, and no one was ever makbid. No one ever was particular about saying it together. So if anything, you find that when it comes to the saying korbanos in the morning, Everyone's lenient. Nobody cares if you say them or if you simulate the actual avodah that was done in the Beis HaMikdash. And yet by Yom Kippur, we find the exact opposite tendency. And what's more peculiar is that they're both underwritten by the same concept. Nishalma parim sefaseinu. Right? The pasuk in Hosea says that in the time that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, so what we can't bring as a karban, let's say we replace with our tefillah that discusses the Karban. So if it's the same principle that underwrites the saying of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim on Yom Kippur, that also underwrites the saying of Karbanos every morning in Shul, then why do we find such a difference in how they're practiced? Why are we so stringent on one, but yet so lenient on the other? It's the same principle, Neshalma Parm Sifaseinu. Our mouths replace the actual Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the problem. That's the problem that I wanna suggest. Any suggestions? Any questions? some people have the practice. I'm not sure what the practice is in the shul here. But the Chazan, if you look at the actual tefillah, so on page 811, so it actually starts off with a very nice introduction about the creation of the world, and you know, Hashem created this, Hashem created that, and then he, you know, took Avram, and then he chose his children to be Bnei Yisrael, and then he, from Yaakov he took Levi, and from Levi he decided to create the Kahuna. It goes through a quick history of the world, starting on 8:11. All of 8:11 is a history of, let's say, the story of Eitz Hadas and Adam and Chava. And then on 8:13, right, you can see on the fourth paragraph, Keset Tamim Buchar Ishtam, Kechashak Yeshiva Sohalim, it's all a reference to Yaakov. And then the fifth paragraph, L'shar Secha Yivasa Levi Ish Chasidecha, says, oh, you chose from Yaakov's children, you chose Levi. And it starts talking about the Kohen Gadol, and particularly the Kohen Gadol's role on Yom Kippur. And then the rest of it actually goes into the whole Avodah. So the practice in most shuls is that the Chazan will get up to this, and he'll say, Amitz Koach, and everyone will start reading it quietly. And then when you get to the end, when you get to, let's say, page 815, so you see where it says reader and congregation? So right before reader and congregation, so he'll say, like, something like that. And then everyone will say, Omer. So Rabbi Soloveitchik points out, not in his Machzor, but in his, Rabbi Lichtenstein published his notes on the lectures that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave on Masechet Yoma, which is the Masechta that deals with all the laws of Avodas Yom Kippurim. And he said, I don't understand this custom. This is a real part of Tefillah. And because it's a real part of Tefillah, where the Shliach Tzibor is representing our bringing of the Karbanos, so the Shliach Tzibor should have to say the entire Tefillah out loud with everyone listening to every word. Okay? And he didn't like the practice that, you know, you just say the first word and everyone catches up at the end. It has to be recited. It's part of the Tefillah. Everyone has to listen to every aspect of what's going on. Every part of the Avodah is important. Because the Rav thought, Rabbi Soloveitchik thought, that this is part of the essence of the Tefillas Musaf. It's not just a piyut. It's not just a nice poem that we throw into the middle. In fact, the Svardi, the Nusach Svard piyut, not Amitz Koach, but Ata Konanta, which a lot of people say, so that dates back already. That was composed somewhere around the time of the Second Temple. Right, so it's a very, very old piyut that actually described the Avoda on Yom Kippur as he saw it. Ata Konanta. It's the Nusach Svard version of the Avodah. So even a lot of, like, yeshivas that are Ashkenaz, instead of saying Amitz Koach, which is what we say, they'll say Ata Konanta, because it's much older. It's like 600 years older than the one that we have. Okay? It's a little more accurate also. So what's going on here? Why are there so many strange rules when it comes to the Avodah of Yom Kippur? So I think the answer is actually very straightforward, not so novel. But it's the direction that all the evidence guides us. And that is something that Rabbi Pupko mentioned also. When it comes to every other Yom Tov, right, so we associate it with a particular mitzvah, Rosh Hashanah Tzkiah Shofar. Sukkot has Sukkah and Lulav. Pesach has Matzah and Maror and Karban Pesach. What's the mitzvah of Yom Kippur? What? Yeah, so you jump out and say, oh, the Torah says, V'nisim es nafsho seichem, fast. Right, that's the essence of Yom Kippur. What? So I would say, right, the evidence here seems to point out, no. The essence of Yom Kippur is the Avodah. Every other Yontif has the Avodah in the background. Right? There's Shabbos, there's Yontif, and part of Yontif is that, you know what, in the Beis HaMikdash they did their thing. They did the Avodah. But the essence of Yom Kippur, which is a day of Tshuva, it's a day of Kapara, the Kapara was affected through the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Wasn't that, oh, everyone in Bnei Yisrael did Tshuva, and by the way, the Kohen Gadol did the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. The center of where everything was at, what triggered the Tshuva of Bnei Yisrael, or what triggered the Kapara, what triggered the atonement of Bnei Yisrael, was the Avodah process in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, they would send the seer off La'azazel, they would throw off the seer off the cliff, and the red string would turn white, as a symbol that Bnei Yisrael were forgiven. So this wasn't something that was simply an obligation to do on Yom Kippur. Like, oh, on Sukkot we bring the Karbanos. No. This was the very essence of what the day was all about. So even though It's the same principle that underwrites our saying karbanos every day of Neshalma Parim Sefasenu, that also underwrites our saying the Avodah on Yom Kippur. It's the same principle, but it manifests itself completely differently. Because the whole thrust, the whole orientation of Yom Kippur as a day is what was happening in the Beis HaMikdash. What was the Kohen Gadol doing at this point? What stage was he up to? There's different stages. There's the process of Kapara for the Kohanim. There's the process of Kapara for the Kohen Gadol. There's the process of Kapara for Bnei Yisrael. These are all different stages in the Avodah. And everyone's atonement was dependent on what happened over there. So if there was any time of year, what's critical, it's the one time of year where the Kohen Gadol went in representing the Jewish people into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's the only time where the essence of the day, or what's critical about the Kedusha of the day, and Pupko mentioned that there's the Kedusha Sayom part of Shemoneh Esrei. So the Kedusha Sayom of Musaf is all about the Avodah. Because that's what Yom Kippur as a day was all about. And that's why some of the Gaonim thought that you have to say it three times. Shachris, Mincha, and Musaf. Because that's everything that there is about Yom Kippur. So today where there's no Beis HaMikdash, so on other Yomim Tovim, we can get away and say, oh, by the way, in the Beis HaMikdash, they brought a Karvan. They brought Nisachim. They brought a Mincha. But on Yom Kippur, you can't get away with simply mentioning what happened. Oh, in the Beis HaMikdash, they brought two Seirim. Or they brought a Par L'chatas. The only way to fulfill the real obligation of understanding Yom Kippur is to go through the Avodah, to try to simulate what the Avodah was. Va'kohanim va'am. Oh, this is when everyone bowed down. They heard the Shem Hashem, and everyone answers, Baruch Shem Kavod Ma'achus El Yolam Va'ed. The Kohen Gadol was up to this point. Oh, now he's doing the Hazah of the Sira Pnim. Now he's doing the sprinkles of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So everyone participates. That's built into the fabric of what Yom Kippur itself as a day actually is. Now this carries over just a little bit into our notion of fasting. This is the one time a year where the Torah obligates you to fast. V'nisim es nafsho seichem. It's the one, every other Yom Tov, it's chatzi l'Hashem, chatzi l'chem. There's an obligation to be besimcha. There's an obligation to have a suda, except for Yom Kippur. It's the one day where it's kulo l'Hashem, it's designated purely for the service of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. So whereas in general there's an aspect of the day that's reserved for us, for our enjoyment, Yom Kippur, which is so focused on Beis HaMikdash, lifnei Hashem, kulo l'Hashem, that's the one day where there's no personal component. And that's the one day where the Avodah is so central. So with that, the obligation that comes along with that is that not only do we say the Avodah, but that we have to understand what the Avodah is. So in a certain sense, I guess everything that I'm saying here is a bit of a tease, because I'm saying, oh, the Avodah is so important, and you have to study the Avodah, and if you don't understand the Avodah, then you're missing out on Yom Kippur. But I'm not actually going to go into the Avodah of Yom Kippur. But I guess what we should do is try to just touch on the basic aspects in our own whatever time we have to try to understand what was going on. There's a lot of symbolism. Only the Kohen Gadol could do the Avodah on this day. It's the only time of the year that he walks into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kohen Gadol had to be separated for 7 days just in the Beis HaMikdash before he could do the Avodah of Yom Kippur. There are two goats. There's a lottery. One of them is sent off a cliff. One of them is shechted inside the Beis HaMikdash. One of them sent away. There's one par for the Kohen Gadol joint with the rest of the Kohanim. The Kohen Gadol has to be married. There's Big Day Lavan. There are the white clothes and there are the golden clothes. What's going on? The Kohen Gadol has to change his clothes 5 different times during the course of the day. So there's a lot to think about. There's a lot to understand when it comes to the Avodas Yom Kippurim. But that's the essence of the day. It's a day that's Kulo LaHashem. It's one final thought. It's a very interesting position of the Ravon, of the Ravya, the same book that I quoted before. And he quotes an old minhag in Ashkenaz that people used to stay up all night in the shul. They wouldn't go to sleep. And they would nod off. They would nod off. Don't worry, nobody stood up. Nobody stayed up all night. But they would nod off in the shul. And this raises the halachic question. Because the Gemara in Megillah says that only chachamim v'talmideim, only scholars and their students, could nod off in a shul or a beis hamedrash. Say, lay people who aren't in the shul or in a yeshiva all day aren't allowed to sleep in a base medrash or in a base knesses. So how could everyone used to stay up in shul? So how are they allowed to doze off? So the Rav Yoh says something really beautiful. He says, V'yesh sheyishenim v'beis ha-knesses. People would sleep in the base ha-knesses. V'omrim mizmorim utchinos. So I guess there was no contradiction between sleeping and saying tehillim and mizmorim at the same time. V'havu luhu kechachamim v'talmideim. that on this special day of Yom Kippur, which is the day of Kulul Hashem, where we dedicate ourselves purely to the service of Hashem, everyone in Bnei Yisrael is considered kechacham v'tamidayim. Such is the nature of the day. It's the one day a year where we dedicate ourselves purely, Kulul Hashem. There's no personal dimension. And we take on that stature of being kechacham v'tamidayim, because that's the one time of year that we dedicate ourselves fully for this purpose. So I wish everyone a gemar chasima tova, and I'm going to be here for Yom Kippur, so I'm very excited. Enjoyed Rosh Hashanah immensely, and I hope that together we're zoche to understand the avoda and participate together in a day that's kulul Hashem.
That's cool.